Welcome to Watch Out, where we dig through our DVD dungeon, where we scour the endless streaming landscape, all to help you find some kick-ass horror movies.
Hello and welcome to the Watch Out Horror Movie Review Podcast. We're glad to have you with us. Our goal is to provide you with spoiler-free reviews and recommendations for both recent films and horror classics. And to not be boring, I am Jason the Terrible, broadcasting from Ottawa, Ontario, and I'm joined from Vancouver, BC by Grave Robber Jeff.
Hi.
And Slice and Dice and Dave.
Good evening, everyone. Or morning or afternoon.
All right, so this episode, we have our feature review chosen by Grave Robber Jeff, and that is Mandy from 2018, starring none other than Nicolas Cage. And our mini review theme, selected by Slice and Dice and Dave. Actually, Slice and Dice and Dave, maybe I better turn it over to you to explain what that theme is.
Is it because you don't remember exactly how to say it?
No, just because I think you'll do a better job of it.
I'll probably
screw
it up.
I had to read the text a million times when I was searching to fill this theme.
I have some issues with your theme, but we'll talk about
it. It's awesome. What the hell, man? That's a great theme. This is the theme, fellas, and everybody listening. So fellettes, too. It's a movie that you hope is going to be good, but you're pretty sure it's going to turn out to be terrible. There's lots of movies that are like that.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the thing. I think most of the movies that I have in my DVD collection that I've yet to watch fall under that category that I hope are going to be good, but I have a sinking suspicion they're going to be terrible.
Oh, there you go. So you had a lot to choose from. I kind of forgot that your shtick is that you drag it out of a DVD dungeon. I just watch for the sake of watching, man. Come on.
I have a music cue and everything to go into my shtick, but I just have so many DVDs to watch. Not even Blu-rays. I have a ton of Blu-rays, but you know, this podcast is helping me get through some of my DVDs that I've, and case in point, tonight is a DVD that I bought probably 15 years ago that I haven't got around to yet. So the podcast is doing its job. But yeah, see, I am a little...
And so is my theme. Thank you very much. You ragged on it a minute ago, but now you're happy I picked it, aren't you?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I am glad that I got to watch the one that I did. But we'll get into that in a little bit.
Hey, do you know what I watched last week with the wife? I watched a kind of zombie-type horror movie that we're not going to discuss, but I'm bringing it up anyway. And it starred Bill Murray. Can you believe that business?
Was
Bill
that
Murray?
Zombieland?
No, no, that's a good one.
Because that's also movie that stars Bill Murray in a way.
No, for sure. No, this one's called The Dead Don't Die.
I'm just thinking that's an excellent way to describe what a zombie is.
Yeah, and maybe that's why they called it that. I love the acting, but it was such a slow movie. You know what I'm saying? I think that's what a lot of people had to say about it, and that's what I had to say about it.
But everybody loves slow zombies.
Were the zombies slow? Zombies weren't necessarily slow, but the movie was sure slow.
Well, that's even worse.
Anyway, that's not a recommendation or not a recommendation. I just wanted to say I watched it. Yeah, why don't we get into our actual podcast here, because we don't want to drag out and make people get bored and stuff, just like our main movie this week, Mandy. Huh? That makes sense?
I sense some hostility towards our future review.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't wait to get into it. Let's start with our ass-smoking, our mini-reviews here.
Grave Robber Jeff's Fresh Dig.
All right, so when I first heard the theme, the first thing I thought was Tubi, because there's many, many movies, and you know how I like the poster arts and getting fooled into thinking that certain movies are good when they're not. This is the perfect opportunity to endlessly scroll through Tubi.
Like you need an opportunity to endlessly scroll through Tubi.
Well, I haven't scrolled through Tubi in a while because I've been kind of stuck in Shudder for the last month or so. I have to say, I probably spent a good hour like going through these things, starting some and stopping them and going to another one because I'm like, oh my God, there's no way I could watch that. And then there were some that like had well-known actors in them. But then I finally come across the title from 2016, Zombies. Have you guys ever heard of zombies?
No.
You know what? I've heard of Zombeavers. I think I saw Zombeavers.
Oh, if I hadn't watched that one yet, that would have been my pick for this week.
And funnily enough, I saw Zombeavers while I was scrolling. But for some reason, I picked Zombeavers.
Zombeavers is solid, guys.
It was, actually, if I remember
correctly. Is it?
Yeah.
If any movie is going to have a cult classic following, Zombeavers almost deserves its own feature review on our show. So, listeners, if you think we should do a feature review of Zombeavers, let us know.
Well, I'm very curious because I haven't seen Zombeavers.
So what the hell? So Zombies must be a ripoff of Zombeavers, eh?
Anyways, it's from 2016, and one of the movies that was cited as a influential film was Zombeavers.
Oh, you don't say. That was convenient.
So anyways, the poster's pretty cool, and it's got like a good catchphrase on it. It's Jurassic World of the Dead.
Okay, I get it. I thought it was going to be like zombies on Zoom.
Oh,
but it's a zoo full of zombies. Idea.
Yeah, so this is a quick synopsis here. When a strange virus quickly spreads throughout a safari park and turns all the zoo animals undead, those left in the park must stop the creatures before they get out and infect the world. So I saw that. I saw the poster, and I'm like, you know what? This has a chance to be good, but it's probably terrible. So I hit play. Yeah, okay, how to start with this thing. The first thing that came to mind while I watched this is obviously kind of an homage to Jurassic Park itself. Because everything's kind of set up like Jurassic Park. The Jeeps look like Jurassic Park Jeeps. The way they have massive orchestral music when they go to the aviary, for example. It's like you're watching Jurassic Park, but it's just a regular zoo. There's even a line that a character says when a guy in a Jeep says, "Oh man, we gotta go check out the trouble on the other side of the park, you see. You're gonna be all alone." And then the person says, "Well, it's a zoo, it's not Jurassic Park." So they actually say that in the movie, so I thought that was pretty funny. I don't know if you guys, have you guys seen Sharknado?
Oh yeah.
I think so.
So I kind of thought it might be kind of like Sharknado, and I guess it kind of was, but it's kind of like a spoof movie. It's not a serious movie, so I don't know if Sharknado was a serious
movie. Like, Sharknado like was not a spoof movie.
But was it like a spoof movie?
Well, it was a sci-fi movie. It's kind of its own genre now, where it's just a movie that doesn't have a lot of budget. It's got some cheesy computer effects and a bad script, and it's made for laughs.
Yeah, so that's kind of what this movie is. So it's in the same ballpark, I would say. Because the idea is great. The CGI is not so great. But then I'm like, well, do they do that on purpose for the comedy aspect? But I think they just had like a low budget. And some things look decent, but most of the time, it looked pretty bad on screen. But then when you're watching it, you kind of laugh at it because it's so bad. So I don't know if they did it on purpose. But there was a lot of entertaining little tidbits. I was looking through the cast and didn't really recognize anybody. The leader of the zoo, Kim Nielsen. I guess the security guards, Ione Butler. And daughter of Kim Nielsen, Lala Nestor, who played a pretty adorable kid, I have to say, who did some kind of, well, there was one scene that she starred in that was kind of neat. But in general, like, the acting's not, it comes across as very, like, scary movie type acting, if you guys remember Scary Movie.
I remember that.
It's like they know they're making fun of Jurassic Park in a zombie way, if that makes any sense. So the characters are all very over the top, and it's just not very serious. But then some of the gore effects actually aren't terrible, but it's interspersed with just a lot of stuff that's hard to get behind, I guess. So the amount of like cool scenes, even though they're not that great with effects, overall it just feels like something that's just making fun of another movie, and you shouldn't take it seriously. Even though I think the idea is kind of cool, and if they did a whole Hollywood release, like full budget thing, like it could be. And then I was thinking, well, maybe they have made a video of like a virus getting around a zoo. Maybe they have. I don't know. I didn't find one though. Because there's certain things, like obviously you got the zombies, you got zombies, giraffes in there. So as soon as you think zombie giraffe, like, you gotta think, well, that's gonna be entertaining. And they weren't too bad.
You know what? What's You're that? Right. I am thinking of something very entertaining when I think of zombie giraffes. So,
yeah, as soon as I saw them sauntering over, I'm like, oh my God, zombie giraffes. This is going to be awesome. They were all right, but they could have been better if you followed me. And that's kind of like the whole theme of the movie. Things were just okay, but they could have been better. And I found out actually after that they made a sequel out of it.
Did you look into the sequel? Did it look any better?
Nope, I just saw that there was a second one. I didn't look into it at all. But yeah, the end of the first one kind of leads into a sequel. But yeah, it's hard to recommend it unless you really like those types of movies. Oh, and I guess I should say who the director was. It was Glenn Miller, who himself was a big Jurassic Park fan.
Yeah, no, I think he also directed The Co-Ed and The Zombie Stoner. That's got to be a classic.
But then when I look at like the more like this section, so I think if you're a fan of these almost like slapstick, low-budget movies, like I think back to good old Tammy and the T-Rex, which I liked a lot more than this one. But those are kind of the movies that you have a couple beers and you just have a fun night. If you really like them, maybe you'll like them. I don't know. If I look at like more like this, there's like Sharktopus versus Terracuda. There's Zombievers. Sharktopus is very, very popular. There's a lot of Sharktopus.
Actually, I have one of the Sharktopus movies.
Oh God, stop saying that. Oh, and oh God, I gave myself a leg cramp laughing. Oh, Jesus. What a horrible name. Oh, it's a good name. I'm sorry. That's a great name.
Oh, and Three-Headed Shark Attack. Oh, Three-Headed Shark Attack stars Rob Van Dam and Danny Trejo.
Hey, I know Rob Van Dam. He's a professional wrestler.
Yeah. Anyways, I bring that movie up because they made some zombie piranhas for zombies. Not piranhas. They made some zombie dolphins for zombies. They ended up not being able to use them because the child actor who plays the daughter was very afraid of water. And so they had to cancel that scene. And so then the zombie dolphins were reused in Three-Headed Shark Attack.
Just reusing all their friggin'.
And so that's where I struggle with actual recommendations. Because if that's your thing, you'll probably like it.
Well, hold on. My question is then, but was there blood, gore, hoots, and language in this, Jeff?
No hoots and not much language, actually. But there were some gore scenes, but there's a couple in particular that are kind of neat. But the CGI was so bad. Even the couple of good ones was overshadowed by the general effects. Because I really wanted it to be good. And there were some parts in there that weren't terrible. I think there's people out there that would like it, but I can't go higher than a 5, that's for sure.
Well, I got to tell you, Grave Robber, you had me at zombie giraffes. But then you lost me when you said there were no zombie dolphins.
Well, there you go, Jeff. So you think I would like it? You know me.
Maybe. It's I think if you watch the first 15 minutes, you'll have a good idea if you want to finish it.
I find interesting is you said you started several movies and stopped them, yet this one you kept on going with.
Good point.
Yeah, because a couple that I started were found footage movies. God, I didn't realize it would be a found footage movie. I've had enough of that for now.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I personally had 3 movies in our last 3 episodes that were found footage movies, so I'm steering away from that for a while.
All right, well, should we open up the DVD dungeon vault or whatever the hell you call it there, Jason the Terrible?
No, I want you to go next, Dave.
Oh, fantastic. Good. I'm actually glad you said that. I was trying to be polite.
Slice and dice and Dave, scream and stream, Sango.
Yes, welcome to Slice and Dice and Dave's screaming stream sack of nightmares. You know what? I think that's the first time I've said that in a long time. That was fun.
You mean correctly?
Screaming? No, not correctly. Well, I mean, it was correct in this particular case, but I just haven't been saying that. Yeah, I dug pretty deep because back in the day, I remember looking through some Blu-rays. There's some pretty cool sections at my local video store where I purchase Blu-rays these days. We still have one. Kind of, you know, the Arrow releases and all those and all that. Well, anyway, there was a Blu-ray called Street Trash. And I said, Street Trash? That has to be good. And I looked at the cover, and it was like this toilet with all this like neon colored and this guy in the toilet. And it said Street Trash. I said, that looks phenomenal. But it was like $30. I said, oh, I'm never going to spend $30 on something called Street Trash. So when I brought up this theme of a movie you hope's going to be good, but are pretty sure it's going to be terrible, Street Trash is the first thing that came to my mind.
You were just looking for a way to go and buy that one.
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't buy it. Jesus Christ, man. What am I? This is my streaming scream sack of nightmares. I have to find it on a streaming network, don't I? And so I found it on Shudder. Can you believe it was on Shudder? I was pretty happy about that. Now, the issue with this particular movie...
There's only one?
There's only one issue. No, I work in the film business. The problem with working in the film business is, obviously, I do long hours. So, but I was like, okay, well, I got like a whole week to watch this movie. So Tuesday night, I threw it in there and I said, okay, I'm going to start watching Street Trash. I think I made it 5 minutes and fell asleep. So Wednesday night, I said, okay, well, I better finish Street Trash. And I watched about 10 to 15 minutes and I fell asleep. Thursday, I said, well, holy shit, I'm running out of time here. I got a little more time tonight. I'm going to watch some Street Trash. You know what I'm saying? And I tell you what, man, fell asleep again. Not even joking. I think I made it about the same. So unfortunately, I was getting a really horrible taste just because I couldn't make it past the first 15 minutes of this movie. To be fair, the first chunk of the movie is just, I did not care for at all.
Clearly.
Yeah. No, and you know how like I'm a notorious like falling asleep through movie type of thing? This one kind of like was justified in my opinion that
you
I fell asleep. I was just kind of like, this ain't very good. You know what I'm saying? And I almost pulled the Jeff. I almost decided to watch another movie. I had something lined up and everything. But I said, you know what? I got to give it, now that I'm like completely awake here and it's Saturday night. So I sat down and I watched it. But the thing about Street Trash, it's trashy like a trauma movie, but it had a bit bigger of a budget, it seemed. And if the Internet Movie Database is correct, it says it's about a $500,000 budget, which is quite large for a movie like this, I thought. Oh, yeah, by the way, it's from 1987, and from the Letterboxd thingy, this is the synopsis. Things in New York are about to go down the toilet. A group of hobos begin melting into multicolored piles of goo after drinking 60-year-old liquor. At the same time, the psychotic Vietnam War vet who rules the hobo camp snaps and begins killing at random. Two brothers set out to stop the liquor and the killer. I said, well, that sounds phenomenal. And
that's one word for it, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just like, ooh, some sort of like toxic sludge they're drinking, and then it turns one. And it's basically right away, as soon as it touches their lips, they... yeah, it's quite multicolored and gory and gooey, you know what I'm saying? Then, like... there's a big chunk in the middle of the movie where I didn't realize, but like no one's drinking the friggin' toxic alcoholic beverage anymore. And it's this side story, which I just told you about, this Vietnam War dude who like rules this hobo camp. And it was a lot more about that halfway through. And then you're introduced to the police officer who turns out to be his only role as an actor. What the hell's his name? Bill Chappell or something. Chappell, Bill. Apparently was a New York NYPD police officer at some point. Anywho, that's the only show he's ever done. I thought I recognized him from somewhere, but I did not, unfortunately. Yeah, Street Trash. It is a very trashy movie, and not just because of the gore and stuff. It gets kind of rapey, gross and trashy that way. There's a scene, I don't want to spoil it for everybody, because we don't do spoilers here, but I won't tell you when or where or how it happens. A gentleman gets his Johnson sliced off and they start throwing it around like a football. It's pretty impressive, actually. So ring the bell.
Male genitalia mutilation sequence.
Like I said, ring the bell. Thank you. So yes, there's some of that. And then it gets back to some more drinking of the sludge business. And actually the story, like, in the, I don't know, like, I don't know if I like the story or not, but from not being able to get through any of it for many a night, and then I finally watched it, I didn't end up hating it as much as I thought I was going to. And actually, it's pretty hilarious. The one guy that I was like, this guy's actually a pretty good friggin' character in this movie. He made me laugh my ass off. A gentleman named James Lawrence, who played this doorman that had quite the little back and forth with this Italian gangster type guy. And that was my favorite part of the movie. Tell you what, because he was basically telling the cop like all the stuff that this Italian gangster does wrong, and cop's like, hey, why are you telling me all this? I can't protect you 24 hours a day. And anyway, turns out this James Lawrence guy, Jeff, guess who he was?
I don't know.
You should know, because you watched a movie and loved it, and he's the main guy in said movie. He plays Jeffrey from none other than Frankenhooker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I didn't recognize him because I can't really remember too much about Frankenhooker, but I do remember I loved it. And anyway, he's the main guy, for Christ's sakes. So I was like, well, that's awesome. And I just found that out tonight. And the director is J. Michael Monroe, who is actually quite a successful cinematographer and director these days. And I think this might have been his directorial debut. Yeah, there's a lot of multicolored goo, good special effects, some explosions. So I went from not wanting to finish this movie and trying to pick another one to giving it a 4 out of 10. So Ooh. It wasn't terrible. Even though I gave it a 4, at some point in my life, I might try to watch it again. I'll just tell you that much. It wasn't like that terrible, but it was very trashy. And if you're easily offended by stuff, then maybe it's not the one for you. But yeah, I mean, if you like trashy movies and trauma, then maybe you would appreciate Street Trash from 1987.
Thank you, Slice and Dice and Dave, for that very trashy review of Street Trash.
Are you saying my review was trashy? I tried to keep it pretty PG here, except for the penis being cut off and thrown around everywhere, I guess.
We've got an explicit rating on our podcast. We're okay.
Well, that's right.
Jason the Terrible's DVD Dungeon.
All right, for this episode of my DVD Dungeon, like I was mentioning at the beginning of the show, I dug deep to find a DVD that I had purchased at least 10 years ago. This movie came out in 1997. I bought it as part of a 3-pack DVD set that was all wrapped together and called something like a Stephen King 3-pack. It came with Creepshow 2, Children of the Corn.
Hey, you know, it's bizarre. I have a Blu-ray set that has Children of the Corn and Creepshow 2, but it's just a duo.
You missed out then on the third disc.
What is it?
Which is called Quicksilver Highway. So the reason why this fit the bill pretty well for me, for you want it to be good, but it's probably awful, is because that's typically what happens with Stephen King adaptations, and probably especially Stephen King adaptations that you haven't really heard of before.
I could see that happening.
I've heard of it because I think I have the same DVD.
You have the DVD?
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
I haven't watched it.
No. All right, well, I'm going to open your eyes to a few things here, because I went in completely blind. All I knew was that it was a red DVD cover with some lightning and some eyes, and it said Quicksilver Highway, and I'm like, all right, so it must be based on one of his short stories. So I popped it in. I find out almost immediately that it's directed by Mick Garris. He was part of the Masters of Horror series. Believe it or not, guys, Mick Garris was the director of Critters 2, The Main Course.
Oh my,
get out of town.
God.
He was also
we
the director.
We love that film.
He's the writer of The Fly 2.
Oh my God, I'm about to see that at some point in my life.
He directed Sleepwalkers, and then he wrote Hocus Pocus.
Get out of town, he wrote Hocus Pocus, eh?
Yep, and co-executive produced
it. My wife loves that
it.
Movie. Oh, right on.
And he did Riding the Bullet as writer, director, and producer, so that was another Stephen King connection. But in 1997, he did Quicksilver Highway. Keep in mind, I had no idea what this movie was. The movie is a two-part anthology. So It's a two-part anthology that has a wraparound story for each part. And because they did that, I was able to figure out, oh, okay, they originally wanted this to be a series. So the original plan was for Mick Garris to do the screenplays for an ongoing series. And it was going to be directed by John McTiernan, who was the director of such classics as Predator and Die Hard. However, he dropped out, and it ended up falling onto Mick Garris' plate to write and direct. The studio turned around and said, we want a two-hour TV movie, not a series. So they said, all right, we're going to use a short story from Stephen King called Chattery Teeth, and we're going to use a short story from Clive Barker called The Body Politic.
Or I like Chattery Teeth. I remember that one.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you why I remember that one, too, because there's a very specific detail in that story that I remembered that I was hoping they were going to put in this movie.
And did they?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I've never read it, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's something that only I of the three of us would probably find interesting. This movie stars a lot of people that you're going to look at and say, oh, I remember them from somewhere. Turns out most of them did TV around the same era and went on to do a lot of TV shows after that, so like crime series like CSI and Law and Order and things like that. But the main guy who's meant to be the storyteller stars none other than Christopher Lloyd. Dressed up in a very strange, like, carrot top bowl cut with some kind of S&M collar and a long black robe. Doesn't really fit my image of Christopher Lloyd, but he pulls it off. I guess originally Mick Garris was very skeptical about the choice of Christopher Lloyd for this role. He wanted someone that was going to be a little bit more seductive, and I don't see Christopher Lloyd as a seductive kind of guy, really. No offense, Christopher Lloyd. Turns out that Mick was convinced pretty quickly after they started shooting that they made the right choice. All right, so just the plot of the first one, the one based on Chattery Teeth, it's about a guy that picks up a hitchhiker during a dust storm, and you know that if you pick up hitchhikers, you run the risk of bad things happening, and that's about all I can say, except for the fact that what comes into play in this story is a set of Chattery Teeth that he bought at the roadside gas station, and how it comes into play is something that only Stephen King could dream up of in his probably cocaine-fueled imagination at the time, and jury's still out about whether or not it makes for an interesting story or not. The detail I was talking about is that the hitchhiker, you get the first feeling that something might be off with him when he's, you know, introduces himself to the driver and he's like, oh yeah, yeah, my name is Brian Adams. Later on, they show a cover of Brian Adams Reckless and the driver starts to realize that this guy's name may not be Brian Adams.
Oh.
Okay, the thing about these segments is that the actors that star in the wraparound segment for each part also star in the segment themselves. So we have Raphael Sparge, S-B-A-R-G-E, as the husband in the wraparound who has broken down on the side of the road with his wife and he goes for help. And that's when Christopher Lloyd comes and comforts the wife, Olivia, who is played by Missy Kreider, and starts telling her the story about these Chattery Teeth. Also of note, playing Brian Adams is Silas Weir Mitchell, who, again, is very familiar, but the best I could come up with was that he was once in an X-Files episode called Aguamala, but I'm sure, I mean, I probably do remember him from that, but he's the kind of guy that I would have expected to remember from somewhere else. It's a bit weird. The big name, though, is there's a small part here for Veronica Cartwright from Alien. She plays the gas station convenience store clerk. Now, the second half of the movie is based on the Clive Barker story, and this stars Matt Frewer as Charlie George, a successful plastic surgeon, and Cynthia Garris, Mick Garris's wife, as Ellen George. Now, this is a story about what happens if your hands decide that they no longer want to be part of your body and they desire freedom from the oppression of the body. The kind of trouble that your hands could get up to if they really start to hate you and try to leave you, for lack of a better word. I think what you're probably noticing so far is there's a bit of a comedy theme to this movie, and it's definitely a horror comedy. I would say this is like, it's not quite Creepshow territory, but it's definitely Tales from the Crypt territory, except that the twist here is that there's really no twists involved. Like, it's not a morality story. In fact, Christopher Lloyd goes to great pains to explain to the Matt Frewer character when he's telling the story that there's no morals here. Like, there's nothing to be learned, quote-unquote. It's just, these are stories about the dark side of America. What you do get in both cases, well, more so in the case of the body politic portion, you get a lot of severed hands running around with very crappy CGI. I mean, I think it was very good for the time, but it's still obviously CGI. But the neat thing is that Christopher Hart actually plays the hands. He's a magician who, I guess, he does really good hand gestures because he was hired as the actor for the hand character in the Addams Family movies, you know, the thing that runs around, just the hand. So that's him. It's the same guy that does the hands in the body politic. You're looking at both of these. You've got chattery teeth. You've got a bunch of severed hands running around. It's not a serious movie. It's a TV movie, so it does not have a lot of gore. Even though you've got a bunch of severed hands running around, it's something you could show your kids. There's a few things that happen that you may not be comfortable showing your kids, but on the whole, this is like a PG-type movie. The stories are entertaining enough. It didn't feel like a waste of time to watch them. It was kind of a neat novelty. Kind of neat to watch Christopher Lloyd in another role that is definitely not a Doc Brown type role.
Was Chattery Teeth from Nightmares and Dreamscapes?
Yeah, you're right, Grave Robber Jeff. It was Nightmares and Dreamscapes. I thought it was in Skeleton Crew for a bit there, but Nightmares and Dreamscapes came out around that same time, so that makes a lot of sense.
I want to watch it, and I have it, so I probably will.
Yeah, well, if you have this DVD, there's no reason not to watch it. It, like I said, it's enjoyable. It's light. It's not too disturbing. It's not scary. I guess the concept is a little horrific, but not really. I think I would come in on a 5 on this. If you're a fan of Stephen King or Clive Barker, or you're a fan of Christopher Lloyd. Oh, I have to mention that Matt Frewer, his main claim to fame is he's the actor that plays Max Headroom. So if you can get past all of the digital MTV effects, this is that guy. And just a funny side note too, because Mick Garris's wife, Cynthia Garris, plays the wife of Matt Frewer's character. There's actually there's a pretty tame scene where he pulls her fully clothed into a bathtub and they start making out together. And there's an interview with Matt Frewer on the DVD about how that was a little uncomfortable for Mick Garris to be directing them in that particular scene. But yeah, these are the problems that Hollywood actors and producers and directors have. Can only imagine how difficult that must be.
He did the miniseries of The Shining, Mick Garris.
Yes, he did.
Thanks a lot, Jason the Terrible. Quicksilver Highway, everybody. Potentially give it a watch. Now we move on to our feature review. Jason, hit the segue button, if we have one.
Oh, I've got a button.
Oh, hit the button, please. Now would be the time.
And now watch out for our feature presentation.
This week, we go to Grave Robber Jeff for his pick for a feature review. Grave Robber Jeff, what did you happen to pick this week?
Well, it was an interesting pick this week. I was running out of time to pick a movie. So I went to old Google and I said top 50 movies on Shudder right now. So my plan was to look at the list from number one. And as soon as there was one that I didn't know, that was going to be it. And so coming out, it's number 15 on this random website's list, was a film called Mandy from 2018. And then I saw Nicolas Cage was in it, and I have a soft spot for Nicolas Cage because for some reason, certain people think I'm his doppelganger.
Oh, yeah. Hey, really? Didn't somebody stop you on the side of the street there and get a picture with you thinking you were Nicolas Cage?
That happened 2 times with 2 different people.
You gotta be kidding.
Where I actually got pictures taken, but then when I was just out at a bar, I got it a couple times too. It was very funny because okay. I don't see it at all.
Those people must have been pretty drunk. That's all I gotta say.
I mean, good on you, Jeff. There's worse things to think that you look like.
No, hey, I love Nicolas Cage because one of my favorite action movies of all time happens to be Face Off. You guys remember Face Off?
Well, you know what's funny is I was trying, and we're not trying to hijack your thing here, Jeff. We'll get back to you.
All way more interesting than the actual movie itself. So go on, please.
I was trying to think off the top of my head how many Nicolas Cage movies I could name because I know I've seen him in a ton, but the only one I could think of off the top of my head, and I realized I must really be tired if I could only think of one, was Face Off.
You gotta be kidding. He was in Con Air?
Yeah, but you know what? Full disclosure, I still haven't seen Con Air.
Holy shite, pal.
Ghost Rider?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And The Rock?
See, I know. Yes, yes, yes. I know they're all out there, and as soon as you say them, I will say, yes, I've seen them. But just off the top of my head, my sleep-deprived poor little head, I was only able to remember Face Off this evening. So
he was in Kick-Ass, man. You remember?
Well, I never did see that one. But keep him coming. Like, what else has Nicolas Cage been in? Let's get it all out there right now.
Captain Corelli's Mandolin. Remember that one? Oh yeah. Hey,
I saw that one.
Gone in 60 Seconds.
Oh yeah,
Snake Eyes.
I own that one. Snake Eyes. I saw too.
You know what I'm Leaving Jesus. Las Vegas, I think, was one of his famous ones.
It could happen to you. Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, it could happen to you. That's when I had a crush on Bridget Fonda. Yep.
Oh, get out of town. Hey, 8mm, that was a kind of creepy-ass movie. Remember 8mm?
Did I watch that one? I might have watched that one.
Jesus Christ. World Trade Center. Hey, The Wicker Man. Funny story.
Oh,
about the Wicker
yeah,
Man.
The bees.
That's the first movie me and my wife went to see when we were dating with The Wicker Man.
And she still went out with you again. Or was it her idea to go watch The Wicker Man?
It's probably mine, to be fair. Anyway, he's been in a goddamn lot of movies, this guy.
Yeah, and just to mention a more recent one, because I was like, oh, he's actually in a horror movie. That's interesting.
But he's in a lot of horror movies these days.
Yeah, like a couple years ago, he was in Willy's Wonderland. Have you guys heard of that?
I was going to pick it for our one last week, but because of Jeeves, I picked friggin' Cannibal Holocaust. It was going to be Willy's Wonderland. Isn't that something? I'm not even joking about
that. Well, I wanted to pick Color Out of Space quite a while ago.
Hey, that's on one of... We can watch that now.
Back
I think
when,
it's on Netflix.
Back when I wanted to pick it, we did not have access to that in Canada. Yeah. So.
And now we do, so we could watch that anytime we want. Anywho, let's get on to this horrible-ass movie, Mandy.
All right, great rubber, keep going.
Yeah, I'll just run a synopsis here. The quiet life of devoted couple Red and Mandy takes a dark and bizarre turn when a nightmarish cult and their maniacal leader seek to possess Mandy, body and soul. And that's enough of a... It goes on for a few more sentences, but you get the idea.
Well, I think I can sum this movie up in one sentence.
Well, can you please say this one sentence so we can get on with it?
Because the point here is that the story here is not very deep. Man avenges the shocking assault on him and his wife.
There you go.
That's really what it is. So
yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is.
It's definitely a revenge flick.
Now, see, this is the thing about this movie. So I started watching this movie. I was getting my car done, eh? I was getting like the old spark plugs changed and a new serpentine belt oil change. I said, hey, I've got like 2 hours to watch something here. I'm going to start watching Mandy. And so I'm sitting there watching it on my little tiny phone with headphones on. It's bright out and everything. And I'm watching it. I'm like, holy crap, this is a really, really lovely looking film here. And I feel like I'm not getting the full experience by watching it on this dinky little phone, so I stopped it and I said I'm gonna watch it with my wife later tonight, and we're gonna have a lovely evening watching it together. Yeah, it was very visually pleasing. Now the thing is, this is the type of movie that, in my humble opinion, drags out scenes just for the sake of dragging them out. And I don't care what you say, you can't talk me into thinking otherwise. There's nothing artistic about them. They're just long and boring.
Well, wait. I agree that they're long and often boring. But you can't say there's nothing artistic about them, because your mileage may vary. But I think the whole point of this movie is not to have a story behind it. It's just to give Nicolas Cage the chance to overact in an environment that matches his mania.
An hour and 20 minutes into the movie. That's what you're just saying happens. And that's all well and good. An hour and 20 minutes into the
movie. I wrote down 30 minutes until something happens. So something happens at the 30-minute mark. The thing that got stuck in my head this whole time is that this movie is a perfect example of all style and no substance.
100%. I loved the look of everything. I loved it. Because, you know, didn't you remember like that one movie I really loved, Vamp?
Why does that keep coming up?
Because I love colors and I love awesome, like not normal color schemes, you know? And the end to that, they're running around in that city and there's all this hot pink and shit. And I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. This movie was awesome. It had colors. It had friggin' awesome shots and everything. But the story was nothing. There was nothing to it, man. Like, I mean, yeah, you can try to dive deeper, but why should I have to try to dive deeper? Just entertain me.
Yeah, because I thought the first thing I thought of was a graphic novel, right? It was more like a graphic novel than a movie.
And there were some animation scenes in there, too.
Yeah, so that, and apparently there was a lot of references to that type of art that probably would go over most people's heads if they don't aren't a part of it. Like, and even like Dungeons and Dragons and all sorts of stuff, there was references to that society or whatever you want to call it. But I thought, yeah, some of the visuals were just great. And then right at the beginning, like these massive letters just appear in the sky, like above the cabin. And obviously it's like a chapter in a graphic novel. I'm like, what the hell? That's not what this movie's called. Am I watching the right movie? Like, that's what I thought there. But
I paused it and checked to make sure it was still saying Mandy.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, right off at the beginning, you know how it says, hey, when I die, bury me with speakers by my feet and headphones and all this, because whatever the hell that thing was, if somebody wants to read what it actually said. And holy crap, was I pumped and excited about this movie. I'm like, what? This sounds awesome. And remember, this one I had, I'm going in completely blind in this movie. I had no idea anything about it. Nothing. I just knew Nicolas Cage was in it. And so reading that little thing about the, I was like, are we getting another deathgasm here? I was like super pumped. And unfortunately, that had nothing to do with anything, in my humble opinion.
That was kind of part of the visual, too, because they were wearing, like, old rock band shirts. And
that was sick. And, like, I mean, it was all well and good. Like, it was just, like, showing how, you know, they're living their lives. Nothing much to it. Everything's all well and good. And what obviously can happen if something like a bunch of weird cult people show up one day. It's so funny, man, because, like, the acting, I have nothing wrong with the acting. The acting was great. Visually speaking, it was phenomenal. It was just the pacing, in my opinion, was drawn out for absolutely no point. The story wasn't like anything amazing or anything. It was fine, but it wasn't amazing.
It was a pretty typical revenge story.
Yeah.
Set against a backdrop that is not typical for a horror movie. And it's very psychedelic.
Yeah, you know what, if I was on acid, or like, not that I've done acid, or like if maybe I had a hoot of marijuana or like a gummy marijuana thing, some sort of drug.
You're getting very specific.
But what I'm trying to say is, if I was high, I guess, is that what I'm looking for?
If you were on the shrooms.
Oh, the shrooms, yeah, or something. I think that movie would really tickle your fancy.
Well, I think that's what they were going for. This was supposed to be its own acid trip. There's no way to explain it otherwise.
That's exactly what I thought. That whole setup where there's drugs involved, like, I thought that was a really cool scene, like, visually. And it had my brain going, like, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of, like, completely dialed in that part. Mm-hmm. And I felt they did a really good job of making you hate the cult, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very important in revenge movies, that you want to see certain guys get off.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I wrote that it was 30 minutes before anything happens. They spend that 30 minutes you're getting to know the characters. It's character development. But it happens so slowly that what do we really learn about Nicolas Cage's character, Red, or his wife's character, Mandy, played by Andrea Riseborough?
Not a hell of a lot. That they like planets, that she likes Jupiter and he likes Saturn.
And that he likes Galactus, so this is a call to Nicolas Cage being a comic book fan.
Oh, there you go.
Pop quiz, guys. You know where Nicolas Cage got his name from?
Spider-Man.
No.
Oh.
It's not one of the mainstream Marvel characters. By that, I mean, there hasn't been a movie about him, but there's been a Netflix series about him.
I have no idea.
Luke Cage, Power Man.
Oh, get out of town. Oh, I guess it would be Cage, right?
Yeah, Nicolas Cage was a big fan of that comic when he was a kid, so that's the name he took for his Hollywood career.
And you guys keep mentioning that it's slow, and that's why I tend not to pick movies that are 2 hours long. And for some reason, I didn't check the runtime. I just said, ooh, number 15. Oh, Nicolas Cage. Check and check. And then I didn't find out until later that it was 2 hours long. But for like a horror movie, I can't remember a lot of horror movies that are 2 hours long. And it's just because it's too much time.
Yeah, there's not enough story for 2 hours here. Obvious that it's all about the visuals then. And, you know, you're just spending time watching weird stuff. And that's some exactly of it's interesting weird stuff.
No, yeah, don't get me wrong. Hey, we haven't even talked about the goddamn demon biker henchman. You know what I'm saying? Like, what the hell was that all? I guess we haven't talked about anything.
We haven't talked about
just how much I hate the movie. No, just kidding.
This podcast has had no storyline to it, just like the movie. We've spent this time and we haven't got anywhere.
Exactly. No, but okay, there's this scene. Because you know those demon biker henchmen that I just brought up?
Yep.
So basically, you know, it's a revenge flick, so this doesn't really tell you anything. But, like, Nicolas Cage just goes for, like, a drive and just goddamn runs into the henchman just like that? I was like, well, that's convenient. Like, what the frig was that all about?
What are you talking about? After he started hunting them down?
Yeah.
Well, he's looking for them. The guy that he grabbed his crossbow from told him where to find them.
Oh, did you guys recognize who that was?
Yes. Yeah. Predator guy. Oh my God, I was pumped. Yeah. Bill Duke.
There's so many scenes in this movie that don't have any dialogue whatsoever that when you get one, it didn't do much for me. It was like, well, why are they talking? That's not what this movie is about. There shouldn't be any dialogue in it. It doesn't make any sense.
It's like, I'm just going to keep bringing up visuals. My apologies. I know, like the scene where friggin' that stupid Jeremiah, and it's funny, the first time I really, you know when like Jeremiah's lying in the bed and he's all like, bring me that girl. I thought he was the weeniest looking dude I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, what, you're friggin' taking orders from this weeny looking dude? Turns out he's not as weeny as he looked there. But the cool scene, like, see, I can keep saying, this is such a bizarre movie, because I keep saying like this cool scene, but I'm not a fan of this movie. When Jeremiah's sitting there and he's friggin' and his face is turning into goddamn Mandy and everything. Remember that back and forth? I mean, that 10-minute long scene where he's yapping about something and his goddamn face keeps changing back and forth. I thought that was phenomenal. But once again...
Well, that was the scene I was going to bring up as well. The way they transition between his face and Mandy's face back and forth, for 10 minutes was... was incredible, because you can't tell at what point the face has become the other person.
That was awesome.
It was awesome. I think there were more good things in the first half of this movie.
I was going to say that as soon as he went on his rampage, it wasn't as good, in my opinion. I actually liked the first half a lot.
What?
But I didn't like the second half as much.
Okay, great. Slice, and you disagree.
It was just too long. It was too drawn out.
The whole thing, first half?
The first half. Well, and bits of the last half too, but at least you had some action going on. I don't know. I felt like
It was just being long for the sake of being long. That's all I felt. And I felt bad because I was like, I said, hey, wife, let's watch this movie together. And she kind of was like, okay, I'll watch it with you, blah, blah, blah. And then like an hour into it, I'm like, I'm so sorry, Haley. You can leave if you'd like. She's like, well, I can't leave now, blah, blah, blah. Because like last night, we watched hours of TV because I had to fit it all into one night. And she wanted to watch episode one of Squid Games. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah. So we watched the episode one of Squid Games, and then we watched this.
So Dave, you want to tell the listeners what was in the text you sent when you were about halfway through this movie?
Yeah, I almost wasn't going to finish this movie. We'll just put it that way. I just said, come on, man, I'm about to rip my head off. Maybe it was just because like I had a time crunch, and I was like, You're gonna make me sit here for 2 hours and nothing really's like, aside for the nice visually pleasing stuff. Like, am I being too? I feel like I'm being too harsh, but I am kind of mad about it too, though. At the same time,
well, time is precious, right?
And it is precious.
I think that's part of why we're on this podcast, is to highlight to people what they're getting into if they're gonna put aside 2 hours of their time.
Yeah, and it's like I'm not against like a long movie. Like, frig, one of my favorite movies is what the hell you call that? Saving Private Ryan. But there's a great story to that movie. Like, this story like is fine, but it's not anything fantastic for a 2 hour long movie, you know what I'm saying?
I think I liked the first half because it was so weird. And just the stuff that was happening, like, I couldn't tell if it was real or fake. Maybe it was one of the characters' acid trips, like we already say.
Jeff, were you on MDMA again?
I don't know. but the, like, even like the guys on the motorbike, the henchmen, like, are they some supernatural guys or not? Like, I couldn't figure anything out. I'm just saying, like, the visuals and the just the complete weirdness. And I was just like, well, what's going on? I was kind of intrigued by the first half. That now, scene where the faces are like changing and the drugs are involved, like I thought, yeah, that was so amazing.
This movie is a vehicle for the visual effects. It's visual storytelling. It's dreamlike storytelling. It's drug-fueled storytelling. They're trying to paint a picture of this couple living alone in the woods, and they have an amazing bedroom with glass all around them, and they go swimming and they stare at each other, and like the colors change around them. The trees look like it's Christmas time, you know.
I just have to talk about this thing when she's in the water. Like, wasn't that the weirdest scene?
When she's just coming out and staring at
the water?
Yeah, that was fine.
Like, even that, like, everything was just so weird.
It was all weird, yes.
And that's what made it so intriguing to me.
There's a lot to be intrigued by. And it takes a long time to be intrigued by it. And so it almost reminded me, believe it or not, of like, and I just watched these not so long ago, the Conan the Destroyer and Conan the Barbarian movies from the 80s. They would just take this unstoppable killing machine and put him on a new crazy set with all this stuff around him. And, you know, when he starts getting into that in the last half of the movie where he's showing up in some weird temples and stuff, it really just reminded me of that, because Conan is not the most verbose character either. Like, Nicolas Cage was...
I can't believe we're talking about, like, Conan.
Well, I am. I mean, if this doesn't work for anybody, it's all my fault, this comparison. But that's what I was thinking this whole time. But the action sequences are just one after the other without any real repercussions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know. I didn't find myself emotionally invested for the second half, even though the first half was all about character development. I didn't know what was going on with those crazy demon-looking bikers. Those biker characters really remind me of the Cenobites in Hellraiser, for example.
Yeah.
And then the scenes at the beginning when he's flying in the helicopter really reminded me of Apocalypse Now or MASH or something. The cult leader really reminds me of Buffalo Bill from The Silence of the Lambs. Obviously getting Texas Chainsaw Massacre vibes from the chainsaw fights. And there's one of the biggest chainsaws you're ever going to see in this movie. So that's cool. And you know what I really thought was going on here? I thought Nicolas Cage was channeling Bruce Campbell's Ash character from Evil Dead 2 at certain points.
Like, I can't believe I never even thought about that.
Like, I could put, I bet you I could put his face all amped 100%,
100%,
up beside Bruce Campbell.
100%. Hey, well, let's talk about, there's another actor in this particular movie. Her name is Andrea Riseborough. She plays Mandy. She was phenomenal, eh? Don't you think?
She was, but I don't know that she usually looks like this. I think,
yeah,
because I was looking at her pictures from Oblivion, Tom Cruise's Oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
She was also in Possessor, which was a big horror movie last year. She does not look like what she looks like in this movie. I think there was quite a physical transformation involved.
Mandy, like, she was so entrancing? Is that the right word? Were you entranced by her? Especially, like, in the scene where she's coming out of the water and she's just staring at you and you're like, you know what I'm saying, Jeff?
She was part of the reason why I liked the first half of the movie, because she herself was rather strange. I kind of want to mention the point where it turned for me, but I don't know if I can. Because everything up until the end of the Cheddar Goblin, I thought was great.
The what?
But yeah, everything after Cheddar the Goblin. Cheddar Goblin.
What the hell was the Cheddar Goblin?
Oh, you didn't see that? That was one of the funniest things I've ever
oh
seen.
Oh my God.
Life.
Oh my God. That was awesome. Yes. Thank you. Isn't this like the most bizarre thing? I'm saying, oh, I love this. Oh, I love that. And I'm agreeing with you. That was one of the best things I've seen. When he comes out of the friggin' cheddar and it's this goblin just staring at you going. I almost had to look up online to see if that was a real friggin' commercial.
I thought I had remembered that commercial from my childhood. Until the cheddar goblin started throwing up the pasta all over the kid's head. And I'm like, nope, that can't be a real one.
Okay. Oh,
and that's
God.
Why I couldn't figure out if it was real life or not. Because even that commercial was so ridiculous.
Oh my God.
So interesting the way IMDb has got the writing credits here. Trust me, this ties in. So this was written and directed by Panos Cosmatos, which is a cool name to say. I like that.
Panos Cosmatos.
It was also written by Aaron Stewart Ahn. And they say, by Casper Kelly, who wrote the Cheddar Goblin commercial. So that's the point where it turned for you, eh, Grave Robber?
Yeah, because I didn't really like the second half, because I didn't really believe Nicolas Cage as the vigilante.
I didn't believe he was capable of doing what he was doing. And that includes speaking.
Yeah, so that was the whole second half, and it just wasn't as believable. But just there wasn't any weird stuff anymore after that cheddar goblin. It was just like regular revenge. And so it kind of lost a bit of its magic for me after that.
Well, it was still just as visually driven after that.
But it wasn't as drug-like after that.
Trippy. Is that the word, trippy?
Yeah, trippy. That's what you want to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that, because maybe that's why it was less interesting, too. Maybe they dialed... I mean, it was still visually different, but it was all action sequences.
Well, you read a lot of graphic novels, don't you, Jason the Terrible?
I tend to, yes. Yes,
like,
yes, I do.
What are the stories like in there? Like, because it's pages and pages of these beautiful drawings and probably limited dialogue. Is that kind of what it's like?
I see the comic book inspiration here, and where I'm not as convinced is trying to have any semblance of reality in this amped up psycho environment. They've got this crazy demon looking biker gang mixed in with normal people.
Hey, and then was there any point of the anime business?
That was just the dreams, right?
That could have been his dreams, yeah. I just saw it as being one more extension of the visual style that we were seeing. Like, we were already seeing something that was almost a cartoon, so it wasn't really a leap to go into an actual anime cartoon.
I don't know, guys. Maybe we should just get on to some ratings here. Was there anything else, hold on, that you guys wanted to bring up?
There were quite a few nominations and awards. I just picked out one that really caught my eye here. The Alliance of Women Film Journalists in 2019 nominated this movie, or nominated with a special mention award, for the most egregious age difference between the leading man and the love interest. Oh. So they have categories for everything now.
Interesting.
But I didn't think, well, I don't know in real life how much of an age difference there is, but they didn't make it look like it was a great age difference in the movie between Nicolas Cage and Andrew.
Yeah, I didn't feel
64
that,
and really. 81. I just looked it up.
64 and 81?
Cage was born in 64.
Oh, God.
Riseborough was born in 81.
Jesus. Yeah, Nicolas Cage is 81 in this ass.
I'm like,
film.
Well, what I mean, his beard was big enough. He could have been hiding what his really looks like. Did I really lose track of all that time?
That's how long it took to watch the movie. He was
he
81.
Turned 81 before.
Well, let's get to the gore ratings here, fellas. Was there any gore? Yes. Yes, there sure was. I'd say kind of moderate, though.
Well,
don't
I'm
you?
Thinking of a head-squishing scene, but it was kind of...
Oh, yeah. Hey.
I was...
That was cool.
It was kind cool. of driven by the psychedelic thing, too, because I don't think that would really happen when you squish somebody's head.
Yeah, but it was pretty gory, though, when you bring that up, and then there was some knives going down throats and stuff. So, yeah, you know what? I'd say more than moderate, actually. Jeff?
What do you think, Grave Robber?
Checks out.
Yep. All right. So you skipped the scary rating there.
Well, we'll get back to that.
So let's do the scary rating.
Hey, there's the scary rating, everyone. Hey, I'll start again. Might as well. Yeah, I wouldn't really say very scary. Actually, you know what? Do you know what was kind of creepy? Me and the wife were sitting there going, hey, that's a really unique bed situation, right? Like how they're like surrounded by windows.
I really like that, yeah.
Yeah, but that was creepy though, man. I couldn't sleep there like that. Someone can just stand there and watch as you're sleeping.
They're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, but you never know who's lurking. Look, did you see those friggin' bike dudes? Biker dudes?
Well, that's extenuating circumstances if I've ever heard them.
Hey, it happened, so there you go.
In a movie.
Okay, well, anyway, it wasn't that scary.
I thought it was a bit scary when you know they're coming. You know, you know that this biker gang and this cult is coming to the house and something's going to happen. You don't know exactly what unless you've read the synopsis.
Two out of 10? I'm still trying to rate it. It's scary. I guess maybe a 2 out of 10, maybe 3. Now, what the hell are we going on to? Hoots and such, weren't we?
Is that what we're going on to?
Why not? There's some full frontal male nudity in this film.
Yes, there is. But for once, it doesn't get cut off. So, that's
a
plus.
Whoa. I'm like, or does it? and that's about it, eh? Just,
well, the anime sequences, we get some topless Mandy.
I forgot about that.
What was an interesting story that I came across for this was that Linus Roach didn't want to do, well, that scene called for some extra stuff, not just full frontal nudity. And he went to the director, Panos Cosmatos, and said, I'm not really up to doing like this full frontal scene and this other stuff that you've got written down for me. And the director's like, oh, ha, 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 that's all right, we'll take it out. So he's like, whew, okay. But then he decided to do the full frontal part anyway, just because he thought that the scene actually needed it. And you know what? It was a strange, weird scene, and I think that accomplished what it was trying to do by having that in there. So I guess he knew what he was doing. All right, so Grave Robber Jeff, how about the Disturbometer?
I would say it's somewhat disturbing in the home invasion sequence. In the vengeance sequence, not really.
I was surprised that for something that was so weird, and they do show a lot of violence, but when they show what happens to Red and Mandy, they don't really show it. So
it's the idea of it that makes it disturbing, though.
But I think there's ways to make it even more disturbing for Red and Mandy in that moment, and they didn't do that. They did reuse a setup from a Friday the 13th movie, though. I won't say which one.
Gotcha.
You'll have to find that out for yourself.
Gentlemen, we got to get on to our final ratings for 2018's Mandy. Jason the Terrible, let's start with you.
Oh, why do I have to go first?
I don't know. Why not? I could go first.
No, I'll go first. I'll stand by this one.
Copy that.
I'm going to go with the rating that came to mind when I finished watching it for the first time.
You've seen it again?
No, I just mean like when I finished watching it.
Oh, I'll copy that.
Because I've been thinking about it in the 24 hours since. But I stand by what I said at the beginning of this conversation. It's with no disrespect to the screenwriting or the actors involved, it is a great example of style over substance. The point of this movie is to show you some visually screwed up psychedelic stuff. And they do that. But the fact that it's 2 hours long, I don't know, it's a bit of a slog to get through. And I didn't find the last half to be emotionally involving. It didn't seem like there was enough danger there for all the danger that was going on. An hour of fight scene after fight scene after fight scene. I'm coming in with a 4 out of 10 for Mandy.
Get out of town. Jason the Terrible with a 4 out of 10 for Mandy. I guess I'll go next since Jeff picked this particular movie. There is a lot of love for this movie. A lot of people really love it. Is it kind of a love and hate type thing where you either love it or you hate it? I don't know. But the problem I had with it was the pace and just the, I guess, kind of lacklustery story. It's funny, after talking with you guys this evening, there were some really phenomenal scenes that I absolutely loved in it. Like you say, the goblin, the freaking macaroni goblin guy or whatever the hell he was.
That's the first one you come up with?
Yes, that was awesome. And like, you know, the scene where he's like all bloody in the truck. I loved that. I loved everything about the first little chunk of the movie. But I still gave it a 3 out of 10. Isn't that bizarre? Isn't that ass-sucking bizarre?
I thought I was coming in. And this is one of those ratings I have a feeling I'll look back on and think I'm being too hard on it. But
I just don't see, like, it. I watched it and it wasn't like, oh man, that was awesome. I was more like, well, that wasn't the greatest. That's kind of what I felt like when I watched it.
Yeah, well, think about it this way. If you had the same visual spectacle,
And the story was awesome?
And you had Nicolas Cage being Nicolas Cage and being awesome. You had a story that was awesome.
Yeah. Oh my, this could have been the best movie ever made. But isn't that bizarre? Yeah, I tell you.
Yeah, I'm definitely not as harsh as you guys are with this one. It's the tale of two halves, which seems to come up a lot with these movies, where I liked the first half and didn't really like the second half. Because the amount of just what the heck's going on, I found very enjoyable. And just the sheer weirdness made it very compelling, I thought, the first half to try to figure out what's going on, because it wasn't obvious what's real and what's not. And I thought the cult did a very good job of making me hate them. I don't know if I've ever hated a cult in a movie more than I hated these guys.
That's a good point.
And there's a scene, like, I don't know, we didn't really talk about this scene, but there's a scene in the bathroom with the vodka bottle. And I thought that was a great scene. But then again, everything we're talking about or I'm mentioning here happens in the first half.
Yep.
There wasn't really anything salvageable from the second half for me.
Not even the giant chainsaw?
No, it felt terrible. Like, everything felt terrible in the second half. But I liked the first half a lot. So for an overall rating, it's like right down the middle. I watched it 3 days ago, so I've had a bit more time to think about it. And I've thought about a lot of those scenes from the first half a lot, so it did affect me. So I'm going to give it a bit more positive for the first half and come in with a 6.
All right, well, I like your justification there.
But yeah, second half, not great.
All right, so let me put it to you this way, guys. What would you rate it if it was just about the visuals?
Oh, God. Maybe 9 or 10 out of 10.
That's what I was thinking, too.
I should almost put a markup just for the Cheddar Goblin.
Just can't get that stupid Cheddar Goblin off my mind. Because when you see him barfing the macaroni, like, Jesus, that was awesome.
If you're in that high percentage of people that really thought Mandy was awesome, we want you to tell us why we're wrong, because, you know, we like constructive criticism. And this is a two-way street. You can send us an email at watchouthorror@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at watchouthorror or on Instagram at watchouthorrorcast. Slice and Dice and Dave can also be reached on Twitter at Slice and Dice and Dave. All right, well, thanks for sticking with us for another episode. We really appreciate having you here. We couldn't do it without you. So, until next time, and there will be a next time, be safe, treat each other well, and go watch some horror movies.
Good night. And keep fit and have fun. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Watch Out. The opinions you've just heard have been made by three guys from Canada. Please keep this in mind and enjoy responsibly.
Well, this is bizarre. I typed in Sharktopus and Christopher Nolan came up. Now, I obviously spelt it incorrect.
What kind of typo gets you from Sharktopus to Christopher Nolan?
I don't know. I spelled it Sharktapus. I figured that was pretty close.
Sharktopus.
Sharktopus. And then Christopher Nolan came up. What are you not telling us, Christopher Nolan?
Okay, all right, go on, so Jeff, you want to tie a bow on it?
Why does this happen to me? It's never happened before. Anyways.
Well, then how can you say, why does this happen to me if it's never happened before?
Well, that's why I'm asking.
Why don't you just say, why has this happened this one time to me? Like, exactly. Why does this happen to me? It's like, anyway, go on. I mean, to be fair, Nicolas Cage isn't like a heartthrob or nothing. Sorry, Jeff. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. Nicolas Cage, everybody.
I wanted to bring up Richard Brake, though, just because I guess he's got one of those names that I always recognize because I saw that and I'm like, oh, I should know him. So I looked him up. He plays the chemist in a drug-fueled movie. There's got to be a chemist somewhere. He was in 3 from Hell and Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.
Oh.
He was also the Night King in Game of Thrones.
Huh.
And you'll love this one, Slice and Dice and Dave.
Hey, that's me.
He was Perkins in Perkins 14, which was a movie from the After Dark Horror Fest 3.
I'm out of here. That was me dropping my headphones on the walkie or on the microphone, making it sound like I was leaving. But anyway, hey, well, that's too bad. It was just too long and drug out.